The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
First level thinking and how we got into this mess. A few market thoughts while sipping on some tea. Financial Literacy Month is getting ready to go. And our guest today is Steve Sanders, EVP at Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 912 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm back from India. What an amazing place. If you haven't been there, well, once in your lifetime, you got to do it. Something that should be, I would say, on your bucket list. I mean, you got the colors and the culture, the culinary, spectacular. Just absolutely breathtaking. And something, I would say, dare say, that if you haven't been there, you can't even imagine. The people and the places and the history, incredible. And yeah, there's some abject poverty and there's opulence and there's beauty and there's despair, but it's all there, right? This cultural immersion, almost a shock to the system, I think is pretty worthwhile to get yourself out of the usual and regular what we do all the time. And I think that's something that would really benefit you. It's a long ride by plane, 27 hours in total from start to finish from Miami. Did a hop skip to London, did a hop skip to New Delhi, and then started the trip there. It's definitely a long trip with a few layover right in between, so that added to it. But you get a great understanding of the dichotomies of the world and the world itself. All the things that we look at all the time and what we expect when we go outside, like clean air, may not be the case. Or that you're driving along the road and everything is fine, but you know there may be a cow, which is sacred, and you got to stop. Obviously, you'd stop here too. You stop wherever, you're not going to run over the cow. But there's a difference, right? You know, here it's like, get the hell out of the way, the cow. There it's like, you know, let the cow cross. It's just a different mindset. The nirvana level of desire to get to that point, and then the furthering of it to reach that ultimate destiny of moksha. They call it moksha, which is beyond nirvana. It is a level of breaking the life-death cycle. And that happens when you are you die and you're brought to Varanasi and you burn the body and 700 pounds of wood, by the way, which costs about $50 there. 700, I'm not making a mistake, 700, go look it up, 700 pounds of wood per person, per body. And you're burned and your ashes are then sprinkled into the Ganges River, the holiest of holy places in the center of India. Amazing. Amazing. Something, again, that you should do. Well, while I was gone, I did a lot of thinking, which was great. A bit of meditation, some yoga. Worked out a bit, too. I made sure to put that all in. And what I noticed from afar when I started looking at things is a few things. I saw the first level thinking that was going on here in the U.S. And once again, here we are, held captive by the absence of any genuine analysis before decisions are made. And we could see that in the recent flurry, this, I don't even know, maybe it's a snowstorm of cross-border economic decisions that has created a real predicament for investors. And what's happening here is that there's some concern. And the primary concern is that many are really just grappling with this idea of whether or not these decisions will actually remain in place, or if there's something that is going to happen that within the administration will just cave, ones that receive unfavorable market reactions. And in the past, it was pretty clear. Listen, when we look back at the last presidency of Trump, it was pretty clear that they were deeply worried about the stock market and the potential reactions, and particularly the negative reactions that the markets would have on any of their actions, right? And they were I would dare say fearful. Now, these days, they're singing a much different tune. In fact, when you look at the speech and conversation and comments by Treasury Secretary Bessent, he seemed to be all over this idea, right? He said twice this week, he was involved in this particular conversation, said, quote, not concerned about a little bit of volatility over the last 3 weeks, focused on the medium to long term. If we put proper policies in place, we lay groundwork for real income gains and asset gains. So I guess they're not worried about, you know, the correction that they're causing. And I don't believe that if, in fact, these were good policies that were being drafted, that we'd have any of this going on. Rather, what's going on now is because the way they're going about it. Just last month, just one day, if you remember, after the announcements of tariffs on Mexico and Canada, the markets erupted, right? They freaked out totally, right? This frenzy, which prompted an immediate retraction, a walk back the following day. And then we saw a similar plan unfold, what, just this week. Investors just threw a tantrum. And then we had a walk back by, well, President Trump on one of the matters, said, you know, okay, we're going to do the 50% increase of tariffs or 50% tariffs on steel from Canada, right? The aluminum steel. But the Commerce Secretary had to come in also after the market closed one day and say, oh, no. Well, you know, they're going to do this and that. We're not going to be doing that. Now, no wonder. I don't think anybody on either side of political spectrum would say that there's any wonder why there is some confusion, apprehension, uncertainty. That's the word right there. The uncertainty in the markets. And the crux of the matter here lies in the fact that they're persistent in this manner of decision-making without conducting a thorough analysis. And what's going to happen here, and what is happening, is that they're going to erode the confidence of the markets. It's that simple. What does that lead us to? Well, it's very simple. That leads us to a market that is going to come in. It's going to leave the U.S. because other countries don't want to invest here with this uncertainty. A reining in of spending by corporations was exactly opposite of what they're trying to do, what they're trying to tell us they're doing. Because nobody is going to be able to make a decision based on the ineffective way that they're cobbling along these policies, kind of shooting from the hip. Now, Bessent went on to say last Thursday, just a few days ago, that the market is prone to big unwinds like this we are seeing now and can't really speak of it. Okay. Not concerned with a little volatility. Okay, you're fine. Not sure why one or two little tariffs with one trading block is a big deal for the market. I mean, going on and on about these things, right? We have a new tax bill every day. Won't be the biggest tax hike in history. Things are on track. I don't even know what they're talking about of that, right? There's the discussion that in the U.S. they don't have a this is all the speech that he gave. No, we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem, okay? Not worried about a very noisy indicator, the Atlanta Fed GDP Now model estimate. Now, all of a sudden, we're not worried about this either, right? We're not worried about anything that looks bad for what they're doing. It's only the good things, right? We'll just discount all, just discount everything. No, I'm not worried about this. I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about this because we have confidence. Well, listen, that's one person. We're talking about millions of people that are voting with their pocketbooks, with their wallets, on whether they have confidence in what they're doing, because what they're doing, first of all, does not need to be in the public light all the time. They don't need to be constantly throwing up all their policy decisions up on Twitter or on Truth Social or wherever else they may put it. Sometimes diplomatic negotiations should be done behind closed doors. That's one of the big mistakes that they're making. He's even talking up Europe given the talk about the debt brake coming off and China seems to have stabilized, there's some opportunity there. And the last thing you talked about was the E in Doge, Doge, whatever you want to call it, D-O-G-E, the Department of Government Efficiency, the E in that. He says it's for efficiency, not elimination or extinction. Because they're trying to make the federal government better for the American people. Problem is, once again, that this is first level thinking at its finest. This is not analysis, deep analysis, looking at, it's just like, oh, I think there's too many people in the government, let's cut them. You know, I think that this is going on, that's going on, or this wronged me, or that was not right, and I don't like it, so let's cut it. Let's see what happens if we put a 200% tariff on French liquor. Unfortunately, the economic policies are why Trump was elected. One of the big reasons. And I think he's squandering it a little bit right now. I was pretty excited when the election happened. I thought, you know what? Great, great news. On the heels of all the good things that have been happening, the advancement in efficiency and technology and all that, there's going to be some great things that are going to go on here because the policies, whether it's going to be deregulation, lower taxes, government efficiency, you know, to a degree, and all this that was part and parcel of the first, but the way they're doing it right now is that they're doing it with a blunt sledgehammer. And they need to chisel away slowly but surely. Yes, I know one will get done faster than the other, but one will also create a lot of collateral damage is where the problem is. And that collateral damage could mean you and me and everybody else with their 401ks, et cetera, are going to get really hurt and take a long time to recoup. And that's a big concern. The other thing I want to discuss is a commentary that I wrote while on the plane, on the way to India. I was slipping away to sleep for a moment. I woke up and I started thinking because I was looking at the screen that shows you where the plane is? And I clicked on the cockpit view and the world view and the right and the left view, the port side view of the plane. I decided to get some English breakfast tea and I started thinking. We're headed south of K2, I saw, the renowned mountain with this awe-inspiring peak soaring over 28,000 feet above sea level. K2. Also, I did some research, also known as Mount Goodwin Austin, the second highest mountain in the world, standing a total of 8,600 meters above sea level. It's located in the Karakoram Range, which spans the border of Pakistan and China, and is also renowned for its extreme difficulty and, I dare say, its perilous climbing conditions. Not that I've ever done it or would ever done it. And there was a movie, a couple of movies made out of it. Its nickname, Savage Mountain. Now, the challenge of climbing K2, or there's so many, it's hard to even think that there's anything good about this. I mean, you got the weather conditions are notoriously harsh there. They're unpredictable. Frequent storms and severe cold temperatures, kind of like what we have going on right now here in the markets. The steepness, the technical difficulty of the routes clearly add to the dangers. As well as the real risk, the common risk of avalanches and ice falls. Now, K2 has a much lower success rate of climbing to the peak than something like a Mount Everest, which, of course, is the world's highest peak, but people still try it. And despite the challenges, despite all of this, K2 is a highly coveted summit for mountaineers that are seeking to push their limits and achieve one of the greatest feats in high altitude climbing. Back in 1954, the first successful ascent was accomplished by Italian expedition led by Ardito de Siaio, with climbers Lino di Lesadelli. Let's see what else we got. Achille Campagnoni. They both, all three of them reached the summit. The towering heights, the views, the challenge, symbolizing the ultimate test of skill and endurance and determination of mountaineering. Now, We've heard the stories. We've watched the documentaries, the movies about the famous peak, and people still know the dangers, but they still set out to climb it for the ultimate glory of achieving fame and just, you know, the accomplishment of all this. And even though smaller mountains can pose a great challenge, there are those that don't seem to care. They decide on taking on a bigger risk. By the way, I'm getting somewhere with this. And even though the odds are stacked against them, they want to do it. And I was thinking about this as I was learning about it and as I was watching it pass by to my left. I think, you know, maybe only a few hundred miles to my, what would that be? That would have been to my north as I was traveling east. And I was wondering if that same mindset is going on right now within some areas of the markets. Because we got some nosebleed territory evaluations on some stocks. If you look at the charts, they look like K2. And it was a concern to many. They didn't care about the risk. And even though there was different areas they could invest in that had much lower risk to reward outcomes benefiting them and much lower risk opportunities available, the thought of the fame and the glory and ultimate fast track to riches, I guess, in this circumstance, maybe could have been clouding their judgment on a massive, massive scale. I mean, that's possible. And I think when we look at what happened with regard to the recent move, I mean, when you think about it, again, there's plenty of smaller mountains to climb that don't pose the level of risk that the overbought, overvalued tech area had. But people are still like, you know what? Hey, everybody's talking about AI and quantum computing and chips and all the things that are going on. We know one of the things that we talked about so many times here on this show and also on DH Unplugged is the idea that the semiconductor industry is one of the most cyclical areas of the markets that are out there, but nobody seemed to care. Everybody was so caught up in the excitement over what is going on with regard to NVIDIA and all the chip companies and AMD. I told you time after time that we were sellers of AMD and shorting AMD for our managed growth strategy across the board every single time we could. That worked out nice. We closed the position. Nice gain. Thank you very much. I mean, I'm not saying that all tech was overvalued. All of it is like trying to scale K2 or even any other mountain. In fact, there are many names that have been, you know, seen significant price appreciation over the last, what, year or so that still have value. But the issue that we saw and that I'm seeing is that more and more stocks are being bought without regard to valuations. And whether or not it's come down now, next week, last week, whatever it is, the fact of the matter is that that doesn't usually end very well. Do you see somewhat what happened with Carvana, 290 down to, I think, 160? You look at, you know, what went with, we shorted a bunch of names that, we went short as a hedge, but we also had, for example, Live Nation as an example. And that went against us for a while. We stuck with it. And the truth of the matter is it was almost to a point that we're looking to pull the plug on this deal when it just started tumbling with the rest of the market. And when you look at what's gone on recently, well, you have to realize that not everything can go up forever. Trees don't grow to the sky. Doesn't mean that everything that goes up comes down. But the fact is that when you look at that area, when people weren't necessarily thinking about anything more than just, oh, let's go get it, this is what happens on the back end. And moreover, we just finished our quarterly review of stocks held in our core position for our TDI managed growth strategy. By the way, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Go check it out, what's going on over there. We had some nice hedges in there. Yes, we came down because we're an equity-oriented, long-oriented portfolio, but our positions did very well into this. And we took a huge block of the hit off the table by hedging out small caps and the NASDAQ recently in a pretty big way. But we did see a reduction in our allocation. What does this all mean? Well, for now, we may be better off just for the moment, walking up hills rather than trying to climb the K2 or Everest in terms of PE. And stock, you know, the general valuation of stocks. Or at least go at the pace a little bit slower. When you see this kind of volatility, when the PE is above 20, edging on 25 right now, hit as high as I think 28 or 29 last week, when you get to those levels, you have to think about position sizing because you can get knocked out pretty quickly on things. Now, once the risk dissipates, we can always reassess. And with our quantitative filtering and scoring system, we'll probably find additional opportunities for clients. But you could also do the same. This is the time that you want to start putting together what we call the watch list, maybe the wish list. You look at a name like what? Palantir. And that's come down from, you know, way up high. We have a position in Toast that was rocking for a while and came down pretty hard. But we sold out most of the position. We have names that we did, in fact, love. And then we took a lot of them off. Ended up with, you know, had a 4% position, now have like a 0.5%, have a 1%. We'll add back to those once we see this starting to bottom out a little bit and the tide turn, because we know that about 80-something percent, maybe 85%, maybe even close to 90% at some time of a market move is reflected by in a stock. So in other words, let me say it differently. A stock's movement is correlated with the market movement about 90% of the time. So what that means to you and I is that as markets are moving in the wrong direction, we don't want to be, you know, huge buyers of things. You know, if there's things you want to hold because they have a certain strategy, okay. But if you have those edgy positions that you bought, like our trading positions, well, we're going to cut those back. And we're going to cut those back in a significant way, maybe fully or maybe hold a little piece in the portfolio just so we don't miss anything on the other side. So think about that. Think about where we are. Think about K2. Think about the first level thinking and think about where we're going. Now, could that all change in an instance? I think so. But we have to get a reality check here by the gang up in D.C. and look at them to hopefully adjust their course and their process. And maybe that would settle out some of the risk in the markets. With that, let's get with our guest today. And our guest today is Steve Sanders. He's the EVP, the Executive Vice President of Marketing and Product Development at Interactive Brokers. And what he does is he oversees all the marketing and product development efforts of the company and introduces IB or Interactive Brokers. The things like he did, like the advanced trading technology, the breadth of the product worldwide to individual and institutional investors globally. And he's been with the company for over 20 years, one of the OGs with
24 years as of March 1st.
Wow. And you know, it's funny, you were doing this, well, 24 years ago is a long time, but 24 years ago also, when we realized things, I mean, you go 30 years ago, let's just go back 30 years for a second. 30 years ago, yeah. You know, I was still going to the library on the weekends looking for all the information in Investors Business Daily, in what other public, Barron's, for example, Value Line. Remember all these, right? You know?
Yep. It's a changed world.
And you've been a part of the development and the way that this all changed. I mean, Interactive Brokers in particular. And one of the reasons, by the way, I have Steve on is because it gives us a real good beat on what is happening behind the scenes from what investors are doing, but also some of the things that are happening in the, we'll call it the broker and the backbone of the community of investing, right? Because you got the whole beat of that. As a matter of fact, you had a great quarter. There was a huge increase in client accounts the last quarter, right?
And through February.
Through February, right. So it was a month ago.
Yeah.
And then you also had a huge, I think it's huge at least, a huge increase in DARTs. Talk to me about what that means.
Yeah. Well, whenever there's volatility in the markets, there's always an increase in DARTs. I mean, whether the markets are going up or they're going down, there are lots of sophisticated investors and active traders that like to hop in and see what they can do. When the markets are moving sideways, it's just not as interesting.
Yeah. But you had a 48% increase.
Yep.
Before the volatility started.
Right. Well, certainly we've had a nice increase in accounts, and this is from all around the world. Now more than 85% of our new accounts come from outside the US. So that engine continues to grow for us. And there's lots of interest around the world for investing in both the US and all the other markets that we have to offer. We just, for instance, yesterday introduced Ljubljana.
Where? So,
I've actually been there. It was in the old Yugoslavia.
Oh, is that where it was?
Yeah. This was back in 1985. That's dating me, but it's now part of Slovakia.
Wow. So do you notice, is there a difference in the trading style, the traders in the U.S. versus other places around the world? And maybe a follow-up to that, are there differences in different places around the world of how and what people trade?
So, you know, we tend to target the same client no matter where they are, sophisticated investors and active traders and do-it-yourselfers. So there tends to be, you know, that same type of mindset, you know, that these people are going to do their homework. They, you know, a lot of them use our APIs, our advanced tools, and they go wherever in the world the opportunity is at any given moment. But I don't think that there's a difference, you know, by geography. I also don't think there's much of a difference between retail and institutional clients. I think some of our retail clients are probably just as sophisticated, if not more sophisticated, than some of the institutions.
Interesting. Now, some of the things that are going on, I know there's been always a really interesting amount of innovation. I guess that's the best way to describe it over at IB. And one of the things I was playing around with lately, and I know this is also a work in progress and something that you have to, because you have to continually, enhance it. And that is this new commentary generator for advisors. Now, this is focusing in on people like me, advisors that are using the platform and what they can do to provide AI generated, right? That's, I guess, the best way to describe it. AI generated commentary on different aspects of a client's portfolio, but also about the economy and the markets.
Right. So certainly, you know, we're a technology company that happens to be in the broker business, and we're always looking for the latest technology. I would say with AI, we're just not doing AI because we could say it, but we're doing it where, you know, it provides value. So we're testing around in a lot of places. I mean, it's incredibly, you know, it's incredible what it can do. My wife, for instance, told me the other day that she needed an invoicing program for her SAT business, and she just asked the AI to create one, and it was able to create one.
Really?
Absolutely. It's incredible what it can do, but we're just not going to put it out there because it looks nice and it's fun. So this is an area. We've always had our portfolio analyst, and our advisor clients can go in and they can type in their own commentary to their clients to include in the package that they give them. And this is a new service where the AI will do it for you based on the numbers in a particular client's package and summarize it. And of course, the advisor can go in there and, you know, make tweaks to it if they want. But, you know, we're hoping this is a tool, you know, one tool, you know.
It's pretty cool. I got to tell you, it's pretty cool, because I think what's cool about it is it's for two purposes. One is it is interesting to utilize for clients, of course, and what it's meant to do. But what's really cool also is like, okay, what's going on today? And it can give you a breakdown. So for example, let me give somebody an example. What's really cool. This is only for, by the way, this is only for advisors.
No broker. Anybody could use it. But the point of it is to write a commentary on on your portfolio. And maybe if you're just an individual, you might, you know, you already know. So it may not be that all that interesting. But certainly brokers and advisors could use it, or hedge funds could use it for their clients.
Now, what I like about this is, let's talk about, obviously for advisors, but for individuals, for example, what it can do, for example, let me explain this a little bit further from what I've seen.
Yeah.
What an individual can do is say, okay, give me the commentary generator and include these points, but it will tell you where your stocks are faltering, which is the best, what areas are good, what, and then does a lot of other things to give you a better understanding, you as the, or me as the individual, right? Forget as an advisor, but the individual, a better understanding of what's happening inside my portfolio. That's what I like about it.
Ah, okay.
Does that make sense?
So we put these things out so people like you can come along and tell us how it's useful. And that is, incredibly
helpful. Yeah, because as an individual, I'm kind of like looking at stuff going, okay, that looks like it's good. That looks like, I think that stock's okay. That's going like, okay. But it actually tells me where things are, what is actually happening. Just another piece of almost like some, like a coach, like an outside coach looking in and saying, hey, you got this stock, it's crap.
And your coach is free. It doesn't cost you anything.
Exactly. So, and that's like with portfolio analysts, the same thing that you have. So one of the things is, you have the retirement planning tool in there, but more so with the portfolio analyst, it also tells you about your portfolio too, right? It gives you insights.
That's absolutely correct. We recently put in retirement planners, budgeting tools, and our last piece that I believe was missing is a tax planner. So we haven't introduced it yet, but we are working on it. We're hoping in the next few months we'll introduce it first into the U.S., and then we'll be able to introduce it outside the U.S. And the purpose of this is as the year goes along, you can monitor the tax, implications, not only on your stocks, but your income from paychecks and other things. And, maybe there's something in there that says, maybe you need to sell out some of your losses to tax loss harvest. And that would be the purpose of this tool. And I think it's going to be incredibly helpful.
So how do you, this is kind of a crazy question, but there are majorly different tax scenarios in different countries. I mean, like a lot. So you program every single country's tax code into there?
No, that's a really good question. So if you think about it, there's probably a couple of tax regimes that you can tax off of. One is mark to market, right? Like we do with futures in the US. And the other is realized gain and loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those, and then there's, ordinary income on interest rate types of products. And to me, those are the basic regimes. Now, the rates may be completely, completely different. So the way we're going to do this is we'll provide the mechanics behind these basic models, and then it's up to the end client to put in the rates and what they want taxed and how they want it taxed. So that's kind of how we're going to solve this. We're not going to go into every country and say, this is the rate in the UK and it gets applied to mark to market or to realized gain.
I got you.
We're going to leave that to the end user to do that.
I guess the disclaimer is you are not accountants, CPAs, and do not use this as absolute tax planning management, right?
That's absolutely correct. But certainly, if you're an advisor in the UK, you should know about that, or you should hire somebody to know about it. And then you can put in the rates and configure it so you can see what's happening.
Do you have, some firms have a investor confidence score. They can look at, obviously, you could obviously pull in a snap of a finger, like, okay, what's the top holding of our investors? You know all that stuff, right?
Yeah, the portfolio analyst tells you that. In fact, if you have more than one account, hopefully you have all your money in Interactive
Naturally.
Brokers,
naturally,
but of course. If you happen to have it in another client, we would add up all your IBM and tell you what IBM is. If you have a bunch of ETFs or mutual funds with IBM in it, we'll also take that into account.
So what do you use, Plaid as the back end aggregator?
No, actually, I think if my memory serves right, it's Lipper or one of those services that we use to break it apart.
But what I'm saying is you can bring in a different account.
Oh, bringing in the other accounts. Yeah. Yes, we use Fiserv for that.
Okay, so just to be clear, so I think this is really cool. And Portfolio Analyst is free, right?
Yes, Portfolio Analyst is free.
So, which is very nice of you, thank you. What's cool about this is now you can attach different accounts that are not an Interactive Brokers. Not in fact, you could again, as Steve said, hopefully all your accounts are at Interactive Brokers. That's what Steve wants. I get it. But if you don't, and maybe like even a 401k or something like that, that maybe is not available to be at Interactive Brokers, you can actually even put all that together through a technology link and an approval process and multi-factor authentication to make sure it works and gets it there. But basically, you have XYZ brokerage and ABC brokerage, and you have accounts there, and you have, let's say, an Interactive Brokers account too. All that then can be consolidated, right? That's the right word. Consolidated get a view.
That's correct.
Yeah, but how do you that's really important, Steve, because how do people really do that otherwise?
It's very hard. I mean, you know, there are certainly services that have been out there for years, like Quicken. Mint was doing it, but they got out of the business. And
I remember this. This is a big thing for a little while, this idea of portfolio consolidation aggregation, right? Because everybody was doing it in the hopes that in the beginning that, there's no way to do this, but they didn't do a really good job of it in the beginning. It was just... because they would also bring in all your credit cards. They were just doing all sorts of weird things. Like they wanted every single thing in there, put your mortgage in there. That's fine if you want to do all the different planning components, right? All the different areas that you want to look at, like retirement and budgeting and tax. Those things may be required so that you can create a financial plan for yourself or track things. I get that. But in my opinion, what's really important from an investment standpoint is seeing your portfolio in one place. Like we have clients that say to us, like, how come my IRA has these investments and my non-IRA has these investments? How come they're not the same? Well, there's different reasons for that. But I say in the end though, Mr. and Mrs. Client, your portfolio, when we look at it, is just one. It's one portfolio entirely. And by doing so, what happens is we can see everything all at once, and that's how we present it to clients as well. But individually, if we break them up, well, they may not look exactly right.
Right. So there were two hurdles, really, with these services. The first one was, for the services themselves, there was no revenue model. The thought was, we'll give this away for free, and they'll become a client of ours for our financial advisory and pay us other fees. And that kind of didn't work out for Mint. And the other one is, in order to utilize this, the client needs to put in their username and password for these other services. And even though it's completely encrypted and protected, there are just some people that don't want to do that. The other thing I will add here is, if there isn't a fee, let's say you have this this esoteric hedge fund, it's possible for you to manually type it in if you want it included.
All right, let's do a quick turn. Let's just I think that's really important. But if we combine that to all the other things that are out there, I mean, for example, one of the things I noticed we talked about last time, one of the things that is starting to get a lot more, I guess, notoriety or it's getting a lot more press is the idea, and we talked about this last time, the idea of 24-hour trading. And that's been something significant. Tell me, give me an update on that.
Yeah, so February was an excellent month for us. It grew with the rest of the volatility in general. What I will say is overnight trading, and certainly because we have clients all around the world, we have a nice client base that want to trade in their daylight hours. But whenever there's volatility overnight, that's when it really picks up. So there was an event last August in Japan. The presidential elections, certainly in November, really boosted it around that time. And I would say since our new administration, there seems to be a lot of volatility 24 hours a day. And that certainly contributes to the overnight trading.
And when you look at the overnight trading, even though you have a lot, there's like 10,000 U.S. stocks available to overnight trade. Liquidity is still probably an issue in a lot of them. Is the focus still on many of the major names?
I think, you know, you have to look at this name by name, but I think the liquidity is you know, fairly decent for the bigger names. Now, there are a bunch of other people that announced they're getting into this, like ARKA and NASDAQ and new exchanges that are forming. So I would guess that would also increase the liquidity. But I would also say that if some event happens overnight and you need to adjust your position quickly, you're probably not going to care as much about the spread, you know, as, you know, when things are pretty normal. So as I said, I think the liquidity is decent. I think the spreads are pretty decent. I think they'll improve. But, you know, if you need to adjust the position, you may not be as concerned about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. What tell me a little bit, because this is something that I found to be really interesting, that there was this break into a much different area that happened. And it was all about the betting markets and then the forecast tools, right? So this kind of, we had all this going on with binary outcome contracts. And then there was also like for example, back, I remember we were talking about this a few months ago, but back during the election, a lot of people were like, hey, we're waiting. And then, yeah, bing, was it 2 weeks before or something like that, that the outcome of the election was available to be utilized in forecast contracts. How is that? Tell me what's going on there and how is that being utilized by clients?
Yeah. So obviously, it was very popular around the presidential and other elections back in November. It actually, you know, was a pretty accurate gauge of what the outcome was. I would say probably more accurate than some of the polls. It's since gotten a bit quieter, but we just introduced contracts on some of the primaries, including, I believe you're in Florida, so your governor's primary. And we're going to start pushing that out. We also, you know, we're about to push things out in both Canada and Europe, and we're looking to push this out around the world. We are a true believer in this in the long run. And we think there's a lot of value to be gained from this, not only in hedging portfolios or taking a view, but as a good gauge of what the outcome is going to be.
Uh-huh. We have something like, President Trump put a 200% tariff on Mexican tacos or something like that?
We haven't, and certainly we could add those. We've been more focused on the primary races around the country to date.
But that's the political side of it. You also have things economic.
Yes, we have economic, weather. We have climate change. You know, we're also going to introduce contracts on indices, just about anything that, you know, you there's a yes, no outcome on, we can introduce. Now, Kalshi, you know, got into sports. I don't know if it's still up there or not, because it keeps going back and forth whether this can be done or not. You know, we'll probably wait and see what the outcome of the whole thing is. But yeah, generally anything you can say yes or no to, we could put on the exchange. The only limitation is what the regulators in each jurisdiction prescribe.
And each of these has a time limit. That's the major issue. An election has a natural time limit, of course. Climate change, you know, that has a date stamp, you know.
It has to be something that's verifiable.
Right. Exactly. Right? Yeah, exactly.
It just can't be what you think. We'll come to you and you'll tell us what you think.
Yeah, no, I get it. But are people using this I would think that there's a group of people that are using this for speculation, and there's a group of people that may be using this for hedging.
Yeah, it's the same as any futures market, right? So in the futures market, you have speculators, you have hedgers, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same types of people that are involved in these markets.
So what else is happening in terms of big picture right now? I mean, there's obviously a lot of volatility. Do you see investors doing some crazy things in terms of how they're reacting in that? Is there still there was that moment in time at the end of last year and into this year that people were just, you know, going absolutely bonkers for things like quantum computing, stuff way out in the future that they were just driving up like crazy. And now, you know, big turn of events, of course, U.S. stocks are getting smoked, and things like European stocks are doing very well. Asia's doing much better. Much different scenario that has developed. Are you seeing anything from the pool of information you gather from investors?
We're more focused on providing the utility that allows our clients to trade anything they want around the world.
Right.
So, as you said, things are looking up in Asia and Europe, maybe not so much a year ago. And so on our platform, you can easily trade these markets or crypto, or, you know, there's been interest in bonds lately with interest rates, you know, that uncertainty, and certainly on FX rates, all these things, and even a little bit of crypto, because, you know, we do offer crypto. You know, I just heard the other day that there are a number of institutions that are, trading between the markets. I mean, that's the third reason people go into these markets is arbitrage.
Yeah.
So they can buy crypto ETFs and sell the futures on the CME or vice versa.
That, by the way, folks, terminology that he's talking about there is inefficiency in that market.
That's absolutely correct.
And that's where you can capture.
People that come in and make the markets efficient.
Yeah, and then, right, but there's efficiency for a while, but then all of a sudden it's like, what happened? Now everything works, you know? Now, last point on here is, I know that last time you had mentioned that you had developed and launched a new platform, a new desktop.
Yes.
What's the status now, and what are you looking to do next?
Yeah, we continue to add features to it. You know, our eventual goal is to add all the features that the Trader Workstation has. And the reason for adding this platform, it's much more modern than the Trader Workstation that was first developed.
That's what I use, by the way. I use Trader's Workstation. And by the way, there is so much on there that I can't get through all of it. There's some things that I'm like, that looks like it could be interesting, but I focus on this. Or then I come back and I look at that and I develop. I'm like, oh, now that's useful. I'm going to start putting that into my normal practice.
Yeah. Well, the problem is finding this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the idea behind the desktop, given it's much newer technology, is that we organized it in such a way that you can easily find these things and learn about them. So,
because the workstation was either drop downs, right clicks, double clicks inside out, but it was not that it was hard to find. It was actually easy to find if you just keep on looking, if you're patient for a second, right? Because it would pop up eventually somewhere. Inside of wherever you are, and that was always a good thing. But one of the things I liked about the Trader's Workstation, I thought it was simple. Well, it's not simple, but if you can create a simplistic view of it. Now, I use this much different than an investor would use it, because what I'm doing is I'm block trading on the fly. We're buying block orders and then bunching and allocating on the fly. So it's much different. But we're basically looking at our portfolios for our TDI managed growth strategy. And what we're doing is we're able to say, okay, let's see, we have 3% of XYZ position. We might want to make it 5% for whatever reason. And I mean, literally in seconds, it just happens.
Right. Well, certainly, you know, there's a lot of power in it. And if you know it, it is simple. I think we were having a conversation before how things have changed. So if you're willing, when we developed it, you know, you might be willing to read a user guide to figure out all about it. And, you know, people aren't so much reading Value Line and Barron's these days or reading user guides, right? So you got to do something a bit different than what we were doing over 20 years ago.
That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Steve Sanders, always a great opportunity to speak with you and spend some time talking about the great things that are happening at Interactive Brokers. I don't know if you have any final thoughts on this, any things you want to impart on us, or what else we can bring up to highlight the shine of your breadth of your product line.
Well, you know, our focus right now and trying to build it out is overnight trading and our forecast contracts. So I would encourage everyone to take a look and see what they think.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Keep warm. I know you are in a cold area right now, looking for a pretty big weather front to come through. So make sure you stock up.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andrew.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.
Another great episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So thank you so much for joining me this week. Always, next week is coming up on a big birthday for me. Do you know how old I'm going to be? I don't want to even talk about it. But as you're listening to this, if you're midway through the week, I'm probably turning it right now. I'm going to have some parties, going to have a good time, going to celebrate, because you got to celebrate life. You got to celebrate life. We're only here for a very short time. We're here for a second. It's all we're here. It's a little bit, a minute. And then it's all over. You got to celebrate life every day. Make every day, I don't want to be cliche here, you know, make every day like it's last. But, you know, you have to also do what you can while you're building up into your future to make sure that you're doing what you can every day to make sure that your future is secure. And that's what we do for our clients. That's what we're doing here on the show. And especially as we get closer to financial literacy month is what we're going to focus in on. So some great guests coming. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for joining me in always. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.